Welcome to Saving Castles, the podcast for castle and chateau enthusiasts. Join us as we explore the fascinating history, stories, and culture of these awe-inspiring structures, from the legends and folklore to the latest in restoration. We'll cover it all, so whether you're a seasoned castle aficionado or just discovering the magic of these magnificent buildings, this is the podcast for you. So grab your headphones and let's dive in.
In the heart of Norman-ruled Italy, under the canopy of a tumultuous era, the town of Taranto became the cradle of a legend. As the year 1054 dawned, a prince emerged into the world destined to carve his name into the annals of history. Bohemond, the firstborn son of Robert Guiscard. To understand Bohemond's significance, one must venture into the political quicksand of medieval Italy. The Normans, Viking descendants, had successfully established a foothold in the Italian peninsula, and in doing so, they had entangled themselves in a fierce power play. Every newborn prince or princess wasn't just a joyous occasion, but a potential player in the great game of thrones. Robert Guiscard was no ordinary man himself. Guiscard, the cunning, was a title bestowed upon him, not merely a surname. As a man known for his military prowess and strategic brilliance, he had ambitions that reached as far as the Byzantine Empire. Yet even he, with all his foresight, could not have predicted the tempest that his son Bohemond would become. As Bohemond took his first steps in the echoing halls of his ancestral home, the world outside was changing. The papacy, long in contention with the Holy Roman Empire, began to find allies in the Normans. The church's spiritual mission and the Normans' earthly ambitions forged an alliance that would later give birth to one of history's most significant events, the Crusades. But for young Bohemond, these geopolitical intricacies would have been distant rumbles, much like a gathering storm beyond the horizon. As a child, he would be more preoccupied with the tales of valor, of knights, and grand battles. And perhaps in these stories lay seeds of the warrior he would become. It wasn't long before tales of Bohemond's own exploits began to echo through the courts of Europe. Stories, perhaps exaggerated by awe-struck bards, painted him as a colossus. Tainted head and shoulders above his contemporaries, Bohemond wasn't just a giant in stature, but also in charisma. It was said that when he spoke, even the most obstinate lords listened, and when he entered a room, it was impossible to look elsewhere. As Bohemond grew, so did his dreams. Taranto, as grand as it was, couldn't contain his aspirations. But ambitions often come at a price. The same fire that fuels great deeds can also ignite fierce rivalries, even within families. And for Bohemond, his first taste of power struggles wouldn't come from foreign adversaries, but from his own blood, his father, Robert Guiscard. What led a son so privileged, so gifted, to rebel against a father who had given him everything? Was it the nature of the times, where power was the ultimate aphrodisiac and loyalty, even among kin, was often negotiable? Or was it something in Bohemond's very core, a burning desire not just to inherit, but to conquer and to create, to be remembered not as Robert Guiscard's son, but as Bohemond, the legend in his own right? The early years of Bohemond, surrounded by a whirlwind of politics, passion, and power, set the stage for the epic odyssey of his life. An odyssey that would see him journey far from the shores of Taranto, into lands where angels were believed to tread, and demons lurked in shadows. As listeners, as we venture forth into this saga, let us remember the world from whence Bohemond came, for in its mosaic of treachery and triumph, we find the crucible that forged one of history's most enigmatic heroes. And thus, dear listeners, as the sun sets over Taranto, we leave young Bohemond poised on the precipice of destiny. In the chapters to come, we will journey with him through battles and betrayals, love and loss. But for now, let the echoes of his nascent legend linger, reminding us of the age when heroes were born, not just in epics, but in the very fabric of history. The Middle Ages, a period often bathed in the dark hues of war and conflict, yet illuminated by the shimmering tales of knights, valor, and indomitable spirits. Amidst this vast tapestry of heroes and anti-heroes, certain figures towered, both literally and metaphorically. Bohemond of Taranto was one such giant. To call Bohemond imposing would be an understatement. Imagine, dear listeners, a time when the average height of men was significantly shorter than today. Into this world, Bohemond emerged as if chiseled from the tales of old, a man whose stature was said to eclipse even the tallest of his peers. He wasn't just tall, he was a behemoth, with broad shoulders, a hawk-like gaze, and a presence that could command a room. Bohemond seemed more a demigod than a mere mortal. However, in history, as in life, physical prowess alone rarely etches one's name in the annals of time. It was Bohemond's charisma, his sheer force of personality, that truly set him apart. When he spoke, he didn't merely communicate. He captivated. Lords, knights, even kings found themselves drawn to his words, ensnared by his oratory and persuaded by his vision. As a young man, the tales of Bohemond's valor began to spread like wildfire. Whispers in courts and taverns alike spoke of a young prince from Taranto who could unhorse seasoned knights with an ease that belied his years. These weren't just idle tales whispered over goblets of wine. They were stories cemented in the fierce tournaments of the day, where Bohemond's prowess was on full, undeniable display. One can imagine a scene, a sun-drenched arena, the stands filled with onlookers, their gazes fixed on the centre where two knights, armoured and astride powerful steeds, charged at one another. And there, amidst the thundering hooves and the clanging metal, stood Bohemond, a force to be reckoned with, unfazed by his opponents, no matter how seasoned or skilled they might be. But why did this giant from Taranto captivate the imagination of his contemporaries so? Perhaps it was the contrast he offered. In an age where political machinations often overshadowed genuine valor, Bohemond was a breath of fresh air. He wasn't just a product of his noble birth. He seemed to embody the very essence of what a knight should be. Yet, it's essential to remember that Bohemond's world was not one-dimensional. Yes, he was a warrior, but he was also a prince, a role that required not just brawn, but brains. The courts of medieval Europe were rife with intrigue, and a prince, even one as physically imposing as Bohemond, could not rely on strength alone. It was in these courts that another facet of Bohemond's charisma shone, his ability to navigate the treacherous waters of politics. With a sharp intellect and a keen understanding of human nature, he managed alliances, forged ties, and even when he rebelled against his own kin, he did so with a strategy, not mere impulsiveness. Thus, as we delve deeper into his journey, we find a layered hero, not just a giant in stature, but a colossus in character, ambition and intellect. A man of contrasts, fierce in battle, yet astute in diplomacy, a knight in shining armour, yet a prince with a crown of responsibility. In the delicate dance of medieval politics, a father and son's relationship often teetered on the precipice of trust and treachery. Robert Guiscard and Bohemond of Taranto were no exception. Their tale, punctuated by ambitions and familial bonds, stands as a testament to the complex fabric of human relations against the grand theatre of history. The Norman Italy of the 11th century was not just a land of chivalry and pageantry, it was also a volatile cauldron of power plays. At the epicentre of this maelstrom was Robert Guiscard, Duke of Apulia, a man of unparalleled ambition. Under his leadership, the Normans had expanded their territories, clashing swords with both the Lombards and the Byzantines. Yet, the challenges outside his realm paled in comparison to those brewing within, especially when they emanated from his own flesh and blood. As Bohemond grew into his formidable stature, so did his aspirations. The territories he viewed as his birthright were at times bestowed upon his younger siblings, causing the seeds of discontent to germinate. But was it merely a matter of territorial rights that ignited the spark of rebellion? Or was there a deeper, more profound yearning, a desire to emerge from the colossal shadow of his father and carve a destiny uniquely his own? Imagine the court of Taranto, resplendent in its medieval grandeur. Amidst the opulent tapestries and flickering torches, the murmurs grew louder. Whispers of Bohemond's dissatisfaction became the subject of hushed conversations. The young prince, it was said, felt slighted, marginalized and eclipsed. One particular incident added fuel to this simmering fire. When Robert Glyscard embarked on an expedition against the Byzantine Empire, he left Bohemond in charge of his Italian territories. However, upon his return, Robert redacted this responsibility, handing it instead to his younger son, Roger Borsa. To Bohemond, this wasn't merely a political maneuver. It was a stinging betrayal, an affront to his capabilities and his rightful position. The corridors of power echoed with the sounds of clashing ambitions. The tension was palpable. Bohemond, in his fiery youth, perhaps saw this as a rite of passage, an opportunity to prove himself not just as Robert's son, but as a leader, a force unto himself. Thus began Bohemond's audacious rebellion against his own father. The very lands that had witnessed their shared triumphs became the battlegrounds of their strife. Fortresses that had once flown banners of united Norman might now stare at each other across the divide, one of Robert Guiscard, the established duke, the other of Bohemond, the burgeoning prince. Yet, as blades clashed and war horns sounded, one cannot help but wonder about the emotional turmoil beneath the armour. The dichotomy of love and rivalry, of respect and resentment, must have weighed heavily on both father and son. Each battle wasn't just a contest for territory. It was a deeply personal struggle, laden with layers of emotion that only familial ties can evoke. In the end, the rebellion, though fierce, was short-lived. Robert, with his seasoned experience, managed to quell his son's insurgence. But instead of punitive measures, he showcased a magnanimity befitting a leader of his stature. Bohemond was allowed to retain his holdings in Taranto and even receive additional territories. Perhaps Robert, in his wisdom, recognized the fire of youth, having once possessed it himself. Or maybe, beneath the layers of duke and prince, father and son, found a fleeting moment of mutual understanding. Bohemond's rebellion against Robert Guiscard wasn't merely a historical event. It was a poignant narrative of love, ambition, and the eternal quest for identity. As we journey forward into Bohemond's life, let these themes serve as a backdrop, a canvas upon which the vivid colours of his exploits will come alive. In the vast expanse of history, there are moments when the tapestry of fate is woven with threads of destiny. For Bohemond of Taranto, the call of the First Crusade was such a defining moment, an epochal event that beckoned him to etch his name into the annals of time. The late 11th century bore witness to a monumental movement. From the fervent speeches of Pope Urban II emanated a clarion call to the knights and nobles of Christendom, march forth and reclaim the Holy Land from the Seljuk Turks. This wasn't merely a territorial conquest. It was a spiritual endeavor, a pilgrimage of the sword fueled by piety, politics, and personal aspirations. Bohemond, ever the visionary, recognized the potential of this grand endeavor. He saw beyond the immediate religious fervor, discerning an opportunity to expand his territories and influence. This wasn't a cynical exploitation of religious sentiments, but rather a confluence of faith and ambition, a marriage of the spiritual and the worldly. With the echoes of Pope Urban's rousing words still resonating, Bohemond marshaled a formidable force from southern Italy and began his march towards the east. His reputation as a fearsome warrior and charismatic leader ensured that many rallied to his banner. And as they traversed the lands, from the coasts of Italy to the rugged terrains of Anatolia, they were not merely a marching army, but a testament to Bohemond's unyielding spirit. Imagine, if you will, the sprawling camps at dusk, the golden hue of the setting sun casting long shadows, the distant murmurs of prayers mingling with the clang of armor being readied. At the heart of this camp stood Bohemond, both a general and a beacon of hope. His presence was reassuring, his strategy impeccable, and his conviction unshakable. The journey to Jerusalem was fraught with challenges. They faced daunting mountain passes, treacherous terrains, and fierce adversaries. The Seljuk Turks weren't just defending their territory. They were safeguarding their pride and way of life. Battles were not just skirmishes. They were epic sagas of human resilience and determination. One such moment etched in history was the Siege of Antioch. The ancient city, with its towering walls and strategic position, was a formidable obstacle. Yet, under Bohemond's leadership, what seemed an insurmountable challenge transformed into a triumph of strategy and will. Using a combination of subterfuge, diplomacy, and sheer military might, Bohemond orchestrated the fall of Antioch, ensuring his place in the chronicles of the Crusade. But Antioch was more than just a conquest for Bohemond. It was a manifestation of his aspirations. While the ultimate goal of the Crusade was the liberation of Jerusalem, Bohemond chose to remain in Antioch, establishing himself as its prince. The ancient city, steeped in history, now bore witness to a new chapter, one written by a Norman prince from Taranto. The First Crusade was a mosaic of diverse personalities, each with their narratives and motivations. Amongst them, Bohemond emerged as a figure of unparalleled influence. He was not merely a participant, he was a shaper of destinies, a leader whose vision transcended the immediate and gazed into the horizon of the future. As we delve deeper into Bohemond's journey through the First Crusade, it becomes evident that for him, it wasn't just about reclaiming the Holy Land. It was about forging a legacy, about answering a higher calling that married faith with ambition, piety with power. And in this intricate dance of history, Bohemond of Taranto danced with a grace and vigor that few could match. Beyond the battles and the echoing cries of war, the First Crusade bore fruits of kingdoms and principalities. And amidst this reshaping of realms, the ancient city of Antioch, once a jewel of empires past, found itself witnessing the dawn of a new era. The city's keys were now in the hands of a towering Norman, Bohemond of Taranto. Antioch, with its storied past, stood at the crossroads of culture and commerce. A city that had once thrummed to the rhythms of the Greeks, Persians, Romans, and Byzantines now bore the insignia of its new master. But what did it mean for a Norman prince to rule over such a historic metropolis? Upon the city's walls, the sun cast a golden hue, reflecting off the sandstone and illuminating the vibrant bazaars below. The sounds of Latin chants began to intertwine with the lingering melodies of the East. This was no ordinary conquest. This was a fusion of worlds, and at the heart of this confluence stood Bohemond not as a mere conqueror, but as a visionary ruler. From the citadel he gazed upon his new dominion, seeing not just a city, but an embodiment of his dreams. Yet dreams in the medieval world were often threatened by the harsh rays of reality. Antioch, despite its grandeur, was a city surrounded by foes. The Byzantine Empire, feeling slighted by the Normans' retention of the city, posed a significant threat. Then there were the surrounding Muslim emirates, ever watchful and ever wary of the Latin principality in their midst. But Bohemond was no ordinary prince. He knew the delicate dance of diplomacy just as well as the fierce rhythm of battle. He fortified the city's defenses, not just with walls and towers, but with alliances and treaties. He reached out to his Muslim neighbors, not always as foes, but often as potential allies, understanding the intricate web of politics and power in the region. Inside the city, he fostered an environment of cultural exchange. Picture the bustling streets of Antioch, Frankish knights bartering in the marketplace alongside Syrian merchants, scholars debating in the shadow of Greco-Roman pillars, and the melodious call to prayer harmonizing with the distant peal of church bells. Under Bohemond's aegis, Antioch became a microcosm of the Crusader states, a place where East met West, not always in conflict, but often in curious coexistence. Yet, ruling Antioch wasn't without its challenges. The very diversity that made the city vibrant also made it volatile. Bohemond had to navigate religious tensions, ethnic rivalries, and the constant pressure of external threats. But navigate he did with a combination of firmness and finesse. His rule was not one of oppression, but of understanding, not of rigidity, but of adaptability. There were moments, of course, when the sword was drawn, when the Prince of Antioch had to remind friend and foe alike of his prowess. Battles were fought, sieges endured, and through it all, Bohemond's reputation only grew. He was not just the victor of a single crusade, but the master of a sustained vision. Under his leadership, Antioch flourished. Trade routes reopened, arts and sciences thrived, and for a brief moment in the annals of history, a city that had seen countless empires rise and fall experienced a renaissance under the watchful eyes of a Norman prince. For those who walked the streets of Antioch during Bohemond's reign, the city was more than just bricks and mortar. It was a testament to the indomitable spirit of its ruler, a man who, despite all odds, molded an ancient city according to his vision. The medieval world was a crucible of complexities. As Bohemond fortified his position in Antioch, a shadow loomed in the east. The once great Byzantine Empire, an edifice of power and splendor, cast its gaze upon Antioch with both avarice and indignation. For the Byzantines, Antioch was a lost jewel, a city that rightfully belonged to them, and Bohemond's claim was seen as a transgression against imperial prestige. The relationship between the Normans and the Byzantines was fraught with tensions long before the First Crusade. Bohemond's father, Robert Guiscard, had clashed with the Byzantines in his ambitions to carve out a realm in the Balkans. The memory of these confrontations was still fresh, and the history between the two powers was a tapestry of ambitions, betrayals, and bruised egos. Emperor Alexios Komnenos, the Byzantine sovereign, was a man of both cunning and pragmatism. He had initially seen the Crusaders as potential allies, a force to reclaim lost territories from the Seljuks. However, as the Crusaders established their footholds, especially with Bohemond's ascendancy in Antioch, Alexios felt a gnawing unease. Picture, if you will, the opulent chambers of the Byzantine court in Constantinople. Golden mosaics shimmering in candlelight, silken drapes rustling softly, and amidst this splendor, hushed conversations and whispered strategizing. Envoys sent from Antioch, dressed in the fashions of the Latin West, trying to navigate the intricate etiquettes of the Byzantine court. They bore messages of reassurance from Bohemond, but beneath the diplomatic pleasantries, a game of chess was being played. Bohemond was no stranger to diplomacy. He recognized the need to placate the Byzantine emperor, yet he was unwilling to relinquish his hard-won prize. He offered oaths, paid lip service to being a vassal, and even proposed familial ties. But behind this facade of allegiance, he strengthened Antioch's walls and forged alliances to counter any Byzantine move. The Byzantine challenge wasn't just military. It was ideological. The Byzantines, with their orthodox Christian traditions, viewed the Latin West and its Catholicism with a mix of disdain and suspicion. Religious processions in Antioch, echoing both Latin and Greek traditions, became symbolic representations of this tenuous relationship. A communion in Antioch's grand cathedral wasn't just a spiritual act. It was a political statement. Yet it wasn't all tension and subterfuge. There were moments of genuine cooperation and shared interests. Both Bohemond and Alexios were shrewd enough to recognize common foes and the perils of infighting. Trade agreements were established, joint military campaigns were considered, and for fleeting moments the interests of Antioch and Constantinople aligned. In this dance of power, Bohemond exhibited a blend of valor and versatility. He was as comfortable in the battlefield's tumult as he was in the silent chambers of negotiation. When the situation demanded, he could be a fierce adversary to the Byzantines, and when the tides shifted, he could extend an olive branch with genuine intent. This chapter of Bohemond's life underscores the multidimensionality of his character. He was not just a warrior prince, but a statesman who recognized the delicate balance of power in the medieval world. As he navigated the Byzantine challenge, Bohemond showcased his ability to meld martial prowess with political acumen, ensuring that Antioch remained a beacon of his ambition, even in the shadow of the Byzantine eagle. As the sun set over the walls of Antioch, casting its silhouette against the fiery horizon, the prince of the city found himself looking westward. The city, with its spires and bustling markets, was now an emblem of Bohemond's eastern triumphs. But the lure of the west, with its politics and intrigues, beckoned him once more. The prince of Antioch was about to become a pilgrim in the courts of Europe. Stepping off the shores of the Levant, Bohemond embarked on a voyage that would take him to the heart of Christendom. The purpose: to rally support for the Crusader states, to seek alliances against the looming threats, and perhaps more subtly, to elevate his own stature among Europe's elite. Imagine the vibrant city of Rome, its streets echoing with the steps of pilgrims and patricians alike. The eternal city, a bastion of Christendom, lay before Bohemond, a canvas upon which he could paint his tales of Eastern adventures. But Rome was more than just a symbolic stop. It was a power center. Pope Paschal II, the spiritual shepherd of the Catholic world, resided here. Bohemond, ever the diplomat, sought the Pope's blessing, recounting tales of his endeavors to protect Christian realms in the Holy Land. Their meeting, two personalities of such stature, must have been a confluence of ambition and faith. Yet Italy was familiar terrain for Bohemond. His ambitions lay further north in the courts of France. As he journeyed through the verdant landscapes of Europe, he was no longer just a prince. He became an ambassador of the East, a living testament to the crusading spirit. The French court, with its tapestry of nobles and knights, awaited Bohemond's arrival with bated breath. Here, amidst the Gothic arches and under the watchful eyes of King Philip I, Bohemond spun tales of desert battles, of the grandeur of Antioch, and of the need for continued support. The French, with their chivalric ideals, were captivated. But Bohemond's visit was not just about stories. It was about forging alliances, securing pledges, and perhaps seeking a queen. Among the French nobility was a lady of considerable stature, Constance, the daughter of King Philip. In her, Bohemond saw more than a potential bride. He saw a union of purpose, a melding of Norman valor and French prestige. Their eventual betrothal was not just a romantic alliance, but a geopolitical masterstroke. Yet, not every court in Europe welcomed Bohemond with open arms. There were skeptics, detractors who questioned his motives, who whispered about his conflicts with the Byzantines, and who doubted the sustainability of the Crusader states. Bohemond, however, was not a man to be deterred by whispers. In each challenge, he saw an opportunity, in each skeptic, a potential convert to his cause. His journey across Europe was not just a testament to his political acumen, but also to his indomitable spirit. He was a man on a mission, a crusader not just in the battlefield, but in the courts of power, advocating for a cause he held dear. By the time Bohemond returned to Antioch, he was not the same man who had left its gates. He was now a prince with a pan-European stature, with allies in high places and a queen by his side. The West had not just heard tales of Bohemond. It had felt his presence, understood his vision, and in many ways was now intertwined with his destiny in the East. Even as the Mediterranean winds carried whispers of Bohemond's triumphs in the European courts, a storm was brewing to the East. The mosaic of Crusader states, though impressive in its expanse, was ever under threat, and perhaps none more so than Antioch. Its geographical placement made it a crossroads of both commerce and conflict. And the shadow of the Byzantine eagle, with its piercing eyes set on the city, made the political landscape ever so treacherous. Bohemond's relationship with the Byzantine Empire was one of contrasts. From reluctant allies to overt adversaries, their interactions painted a vivid tableau of medieval geopolitics. Emperor Alexios Komnenos, ever the astute statesman, saw in Bohemond both a formidable adversary and a potential threat. It was clear to Alexios that Bohemond, with his combined might of Norman fierceness and European support, was a force to reckon with. Yet the realm of the Byzantines was not just about military might. It was an arena of intrigues, espionage and diplomacy. Spies lurked in the bustling markets of Antioch, listening to whispers, tracking Bohemond's movements, gauging the strength of his alliances. The subtle game of shadows was afoot. But Bohemond was not one to be outdone. Recognizing the Byzantine threat, he embarked on what came to be known as the Crusade against the Byzantines. Now, this wasn't a crusade in the traditional sense. It wasn't about reclaiming holy lands or defending Christian realms. It was a strategic move, a show of strength designed to remind the Byzantines of the Normans' martial prowess. The campaigns were marked by a series of skirmishes, sieges, and strategic maneuvers. The landscapes of the eastern Mediterranean bore witness to these epic confrontations. Imagine for a moment the Byzantine phalanxes, resplendent in their armor, their shields shimmering in the sun, lined up against the Norman knights, their banners fluttering, a fierce determination in their eyes. The very earth seemed to tremble under the weight of this historical face-off. Tales of these battles, of the clash of swords, the echoes of war cries, and the strategic brilliance of Bohemond became legendary. One could almost hear the rhythmic beats of war drums, the distant chants of soldiers, and the solemn prayers of monks, each hoping for victory. But as with any conflict, this struggle was not without its costs. Territories changed hands, loyalties were tested, and the once clear lines between allies and adversaries blurred. Bohemond's crusade, though it showcased his military brilliance, also brought to the fore the complexities of leading a crusader state. Every decision, every alliance, every battle had implications not just for Antioch, but for the delicate equilibrium of the medieval Levant. Throughout this campaign, Bohemond's leadership was unwavering. Even when faced with setbacks, his resolve did not falter. He was a man who recognized that in the grand game of empires, sometimes one had to retreat to advance. Sometimes alliances had to be sacrificed for long-term goals. The landscape of the eastern Mediterranean had been irrevocably altered. Antioch, though still a beacon of Norman strength, was now a city aware of its vulnerabilities. The Byzantines, despite their imperial might, had come to recognize the indomitable spirit of the Crusaders. In this intricate dance of power and prestige, Bohemond of Taranto emerged not just as a warrior prince, but as a symbol of the crusading spirit, a man whose very name evoked a blend of fear, respect, and awe in the courts of both the East and the West. Time, that unyielding river, has a way of sculpting even the mightiest of boulders. Bohemond of Taranto, once the fiery youth of Normandy, then the indomitable prince of Antioch, was no exception. As the years rolled by, they brought with them not only the wisdom of experience, but also the weight of responsibility. The prince, who had once galloped through the sands of the Levant with the wind in his hair, now stood perhaps a touch more measured, a tad more reflective, but no less formidable. Yet, as the ancient saying goes, every warrior must face his final battle. The world of the 12th century was in flux. The Crusader states, though resilient, were continually pressed by external forces. Muslim powers rejuvenated and united under figures like the legendary Adad in Zengi posed a renewed threat. The winds of change were blowing from the east, and they carried with them the sounds of war drums. In this turbulent atmosphere, the city of Antioch, Bohemond's crown jewel, found itself under siege. Zengi, determined to reclaim the city for Islam, mobilized a force that was both vast and formidable. The walls of Antioch, which had once witnessed the heroics of the First Crusade, now braced themselves for another epical confrontation. Inside those walls, Bohemond rallied his forces. The prince, though older, had lost none of his fire. He recognized the gravity of the situation. This wasn't just about defending a city. It was about preserving the legacy of the Crusades, of ensuring that the sacrifices of countless knights, pilgrims, and citizens were not in vain. The siege was a test of endurance, strategy, and willpower. Bohemond, drawing from his vast reservoir of experience, orchestrated a defense that was as ingenious as it was fierce. Tunnels were fortified, battlements strengthened, and archers positioned strategically. The air was thick with tension, and every sunrise brought with it the anticipation of battle. Imagine for a moment the scene at dawn, the first rays of the sun breaking over the horizon, casting the city in a golden hue, the Muslim forces, their banners waving, lining up for the day's assault. Inside the city, Bohemond clad in armor, rallying his troops, his voice echoing through the streets, rekindling hope and reinforcing resolve. Day after day, the siege wore on. The clanging of swords, the twang of bowstrings, and the cries of warriors became a constant symphony. There were moments of despair, yes, but also moments of unparalleled bravery. Tales of individual heroics, of knights defending breaches against overwhelming odds, of citizens joining the defense, became the stuff of legend. Bohemond, ever the leader, was at the forefront. He led sorties, repelled assaults, and even engaged in hand-to-hand combat. His presence on the walls, sword in hand, became a beacon of hope for the beleaguered city. He was a living testament to the spirit of the Crusades, a symbol of unwavering determination. But sieges are as much about psychology as they are about warfare. Bohemond, with his keen understanding of the human psyche, recognized this. He used every tool at his disposal, from diplomacy to subterfuge, to ensure the attitude of his troops remained high. He was not just fighting a physical battle. He was waging a war of wills. As the siege reached its climax, the world watched with bated breath. The fate of Antioch, of the Crusader states, and in many ways the legacy of the First Crusade hung in the balance. Through grit, strategy, and sheer willpower, Antioch held its ground. The siege, though grueling, showcased Bohemond's military genius, his leadership, and his indomitable spirit. It was a reminder, both to his allies and his adversaries, of the resilience of the Crusader spirit. And while every warrior, no matter how legendary, must face his final sunset for Bohemond of Taranto, the last siege of Antioch ensured that his legacy would shine bright long after the sun had set on his era. The tapestry of history is woven with threads of countless hues, some vibrant and unmissable, while others are more subdued, content in their quiet elegance. But every once in a while, there emerges a thread so brilliant, so compelling, that it not only stands out, but also redefines the entire canvas. Bohemond of Taranto was undoubtedly one such thread. As our journey through the chapters of Bohemond's life draws to a close, we must step back and marvel at the vast panorama it paints. It's a panorama not just of battles and sieges, but of a spirit that soared through the ages, leaving an indelible mark. Bohemond's death might have been the end of his physical journey, but legends, as we know, transcend the mortal realm. The Prince of Antioch, the Norman knight who stood toe with emperors and sultans, was not just a man. He was an idea, a symbol of an age, when ambition collided and coalesced in the crucible of the Crusades. His impact on the political landscape of the medieval Levant is undeniable. Antioch, under his leadership, transformed from a besieged city to a beacon of the Crusader states. But beyond the walls of cities and the boundaries of empires, Bohemond's legacy took on a more profound hue. In the courts of Europe, he was celebrated not just as a warrior prince, but as a diplomat, a visionary who understood the intricate dance of alliances and power politics. The tales of his European journeys, his interactions with monarchs and magnates, became part of the folklore. Balladeers sang of his exploits, while troubadours wove tales of his valor and chivalry. In the East, even among his adversaries, there was a grudging respect for Bohemond. The Muslim chronicles, though often critical, acknowledged his military genius and his leadership, In the bazaars of Aleppo and Damascus, mothers would perhaps hush their children with tales of the fierce Norman prince, while in the courts, sultans and emirs would speak of him in hushed, reverent tones. His influence was also evident in the realm of military strategy. The tactics he employed, the siege warfare methods he pioneered, and his understanding of the psychological aspects of war became subjects of study and admiration. Generations of commanders, both in the East and the West, would look to Bohemond's campaigns as a source of inspiration. But perhaps the most enduring facet of Bohemond's legacy was the idea of the Crusader spirit, a spirit that, despite its many contradictions, symbolized a unique blend of faith, ambition, and adventure. Bohemond became the embodiment of this spirit. In him, the world saw the possibilities and perils of the Crusader era. His life, with its soaring highs and crushing lows, was a microcosm of the age itself. As we stand on the shores of time, looking back at the vast ocean of history, the waves bring forth countless stories, tales of kings and paupers, of empires and revolutions. But every so often there emerges a tale so captivating, so profound, that it commands our undivided attention. The tale of Bohemond of Taranto is one such story. It is said that legends never truly die. They live on, not just in the pages of history books or the verses of ballads, but in the very essence of the ages they define. As the sun sets on our journey through Bohemond's life, one can't help but feel a sense of awe, a sense of gratitude. For in understanding his legacy, we gain a deeper appreciation of an age that, for all its complexities, gave the world tales of unmatched heroism and unparalleled adventure. And so, as the curtain falls, we take a bow, not just to Bohemond of Taranto, but to the indomitable spirit of an era that will forever remain etched in golden letters on the pages of history. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Saving Castles podcast. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the fascinating world of castles and chateaus. Don't miss out and subscribe to our podcast to get notified when new episodes are released. For more information about us and our work, visit savingcastles.com. Thank you for listening.